You're listening to Amud V'Chazara, Daniel Eisenberg, Maseches Irvin, Daf Chaf Aleph, Amud Aleph. We're going to start at the bottom of Chaf Amud Beis. For Chaf Aleph, the simon is a ka, meaning a Bostonian pronunciation of the word car, a ka. So that's going to be the simon. There are going to be two zikru points on tonight's Amud. Starting from Chaf Amud Beis, the bottom, Amr Yitzchak Barada, Lohutru Pasi Biros, El Ole Regalim Bilvad. That the Pasi Biros were only permitted for the purpose of Ole Regalim, people who were fulfilling the mitzvah of Aliyah LeRegel, traveling all over, trying to get their way to Yerushalayim. And they don't always have access to water, so that's whom it was made for. V'atanya, but we learned in the Braisa, lo hutru pasibiros el lagabe behema, that it was only for the behemos. Wait, so which one is it? Is it for the Ole Regalim or for the behemos? So the Gemara says, lagabe behema bilvad, so my behema, behemos Ole Regalim. That's what it means. It means the behemos of the Ole Regalim. Aval adam, metafis ve'ole metafis ve'yored. But the person, the Ole Regal himself, actually is not supposed to draw up the water for himself. Rather, he should be metapes. He should be like climbing and going up and climbing and going down. Rashi says, "Oches biyada v'yagrav bekesalim v'nichnas v'yotzei." The person is expected to go into the Rishus Yachid, lower himself into the well, drink to his heart's content, come back up. But the heter pasi biros is you're allowed to draw the water for the purpose of the animals.
So just then, meaning hypothetically, like midwinter. You wouldn't use those beeros or poros, pachamos, for your animal.
It's a good question. Is that something that you can rely on in general because they were instituted for the regal? Let's say it's not in the regal season. Let's say they're not doing the mitzvah of the regal. It's a good question.
You say he has to go down.
I guess not.
He has to go down into the well. What does that mean? He goes down.
He climbs. Goes
into
down.
The well.
He
goes.
Climbs, he can't bring the water down. Out of the well.
So he has to stay in the well.
The well is a Rishus Yachid.
Uh-huh.
So he, only drink so he so. Can't, and outside the well is a Rishus Arabim. So it's really a big problem. How is he allowed to draw the...
So what is he doing? He's on a rope, and he goes on a rope into the well?
No. So we're about to see a qualification to help us get there. Any, is this true? V'hamar Rav Yitzchak, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, lo hutru pasibiros el leber mayim chayim bilvad. So, but it was taught in the name of Shmuel that pasibiros is only stated by be'er mayim chayim, right? Like living water, a well with living water. V'ila behema mali chayim mali mekumsin. But if we're only talking about behema, then it shouldn't be. We don't need mayim chayim. Mayim chayim is like a higher level of water, of more clean water that we care about for people to drink. But for animals, it doesn't really matter if it's gathered water or it's mayim chayim. It's like actual well flowing water. So why would there be a qualification that pasibiros only works by be'er mayim chayim? It sounds like it's specifically for humans that we want, or at least also including humans that we want the setter for. So the Gemara responds interestingly, "Be'inon midi dechazil adam." No, we need something that is fitting for people, but the heter isn't really for people. Why? So this Rashi is so interesting. Second line, Rashi, "Midi dechazil adam kevan demayim meshave lehu mechitza," because the water is what's making it considered a wall, right? As we mentioned with the final of Abaye's six questions to Rabba. Right? What if the water dries up? Are the pasibaros still pasibaros? He says, absolutely not. The wall becomes a halachic wall because of the water being there. So because of that, Rashi says, be'inan mayim chashuvin. We need chashiv water in order to make the mechitzos good mechitzos. Which, it's interesting because it doesn't sound like that makes sense for the reason. Right, the reason for it is like it's a heter because we want animals to drink. So it shouldn't matter what water it is.
It's not for a mikvah. I'm saying he's not going to dunk in a mikvah.
Right, but so that's what I'm saying. You don't need my chayim for every mikvah. It's only for certain cases. But the point is that no. But I guess people.
The distinction between bear mayim chayim and rainwater.
It sounds like bear mayim chayim is something that's that's more chashev, that a human is more makbid to be careful to drink if they have that available to them. That's what it sounds like. It sounds like higher level stuff. Something that you wouldn't usually waste on an animal if you have different levels of water in front of you. So it sounds like the Gemara's question is, it sounds like because, we were mentioning this, that it has to be Bermayim Chaim, that it's something that we want for...
under the impression
it sounds like something we want for humans. So you're saying no, it's not because we want humans to drink from it. Actually, humans are not supposed to drink from it. This is really a heter just for the animals of the humans, but because of but because we need water, that's going to create a halachic reality of walls that really shouldn't be such good walls. To make them good walls, we need mayim chashuvim, like bear mayim chaim. So that's it's a very interesting Rashi. Yeah, what were you saying?
There's a lot of things here. A lot of things.
Okay.
First thing is Miley of Behem, Miley Adam. If we're relying on these walls, it shouldn't make a difference if it's a person, for a person or for an animal, because the mice, it's for a person of all intents and purposes. When it's for my animal, it's for me. I have to be relying on this.
No, because the animal can't go into the well. Well, let's do the next halacha, and then okay, we'll see, because I think this will clarify something that Penny asked and something that you asked.
Yeah. Asking Kasha Namaisa, what is the problem with rainwater? I mean, before the Industrial Revolution, incurring massive carbon emissions, wasn't rainwater considered fairly pure? Why was it not any more drinkable, less drinkable?
I mean, I guess Bermayim Chaim is better.
I suppose it's just like this is news to me. So.
Okay. Me too. Okay, so let's see this next halacha, because I think it'll answer at least one of your questions and Penny's question before. Gufa. So this itself is a question, or let's analyze this itself. Luhut shupasi biros el lebehema bilvad, and then it continues. Continuing the brisa, aval adam metafes vel metafes v'yored vim hayu rechovin. But if it was a very wide well, afilu adam nami, even a person can. Why? Rashi says, im hayu rechovin ve'ino yochel etapes. Right, and he's not able to climb easily. So then we allow him to do it for himself as well. Meaning that this heter is based on necessity, which I think is also part of your question. This is based on necessity. So if it's a narrow well that he can easily like put his hands on the wall, lower himself in, bring himself back up. So well, your cow can't do that. So we allow you to take it out for your cow, for you yourself to drink. We don't like relying on pasi biros. It's not a good. It's not a good wall. There's more. It's parats meruba. We don't like it. Special heter for the Oli Regalim for their animals. But a person, you don't need that. You get into the well yourself and drink. It's too wide? Okay, fine. Then you can.
Well, shouldn't it depend on the person? Some people may be nervous. It should be not the chavsa of the well. It should be the good for the,
Okay,
some people, I'm saying.
It's a good question. What if you have somebody who's what if somebody's overweight? What if someone's the size of a cow?
Or that.
Okay,
right.
Yeah. It could be. Yeah, it could be that they would say yes.
My question is
what it just means is if it's practical in some way for you to do it, great. And if not.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that could very well be what it is. I'm not going to paskin. So if you find yourself in a case with pasi biros, don't rely on my psakia, Kol Rav Cohen. But it sounds like it would make sense, right, like what you're saying.
Why? So it's the same act of so taking the bucket of water out of the Rosh Hashanah well into the quasi Rosh Hashanah, quasi Rosh Hashanah of the pasi biros, right? So it's the same action whether I'm then giving it to my animal or drinking it for myself.
Right, but
the person is doing the exact same.
Basically, what we're saying. First of all, this is only a Durban issue, as we learned on the previous staff. Of course, it's fine, because if it wasn't, then they wouldn't be able to make a heter over here. So they're making a heter, but they say we don't want you to rely on the kula if you don't have to. That's what it's saying. It's on a necessity based kula. Okay. Next, and this next piece is going to sound partially familiar. Continuing this brisa, so we said, okay, now if it's wide, then a person can drink for, then a person can also bring out for himself. But you're not allowed to fill up the water and give it to this animal. So you're not allowed to give the water to the animal directly, but you put it in front of the animal and. You put it in front of the animal, have the animal drink on its own, which we quoted. We quoted this, and this was a problem for us in the previous staff. So, or actually, it was an answer. We'll see in a moment.
What does that mean?
So that means that you cannot.
What does he do? Where does he put the water?
You put it in a trough in front of it, or something like that, or a bowl in front of it. But you don't like take the bucket and pour it into the mouth of the animal. So now Ravanan asks. Ravanan asks, Maskiflo Ravanon, Imkain, Maho Hilu Pasibiros. So if you can't even give the water to the animal, what help does what how did the pasuk berurah help at all? So the Gemara says, hold on, what are you talking about? Ma ho'ila, what has it help? Lamalos mehen. No, this is actually very helpful. This is a very effective kula, because now you can draw up the water from the well instead of throwing your cow down the well so it can drink, or letting your cow die of thirst. So you'll have to draw the water out and you put it in front of it. That's actually quite helpful. So what was Rav Anan asking? So we have to try to re-understand Rav Anan's question. Ella mahoel rosa varuba shalpara. Ah, his question is, What help? Why does it help if you have the rosha and the ruba of the para, right? Which is going back to our Mishnah that we said you need to how wide should how close could you make it? You need to have enough space, the distance of the diyumdin to the well. You need enough space for the animal to get the rosha of a ruba inside that space. So it's.
Yeah. Because so you don't have to get, so it doesn't go into Rishon Rabbah, right? That's
right. Yes, okay. Right. But now, if we can't even hold, and why not? What's the problem with letting go into the Rishon Rabbah?
Because
no, but it's just the animal. So if the animal goes to the Rishon Rabbah, so we're concerned that you might take your bucket with you, like, hey, get back here, Bessie, and you chase after it, and you stepped out. Oh my goodness, I stepped out from this Rishon Rabbah to Rishon Rabbah, now I have a problem. Mm-hmm. So because we were concerned about that, but hold on, that concern only comes into play if you're holding the bucket and giving it to the animal at the same time. But over here, the Bryce has just told me that I'm not allowed to feed it to the water. I'm had to pour it in. So now Rav Anan's question is: so why do we need Rosh and Ruba in the first place? It doesn't make a difference. Mm-hmm. So the Gemara answers, which should be familiar to you now, just seeing it like in a different from a different perspective. Amar Abaye, Hakav Mayas Kinan. What are we dealing with over here? Be'evus Ha'omid Rishus Harabim Gavora Asara. We're talking about whether there's a trough in the Rishus Harabim higher than 10 Tvachim, V'rochav Arba and wider than 4 Tvachim, meaning it's a Rishus Yachid itself. V'rosho Nichnas Lebein Apasin V'chule, and the Gemara doesn't even finish. The Gemara just says v'chule, etc., because the Gemara says, I know you already dealt with that twice. There were two different versions on the previous Amud dealing with this question from a different end. So last time we started with a different case, the Rosh and Merubah, and we brought this Brisa in as a question. Hold on, how does it apply? Over here, we started from this line in the Brisa and brought in the Rosh of Aruba piece. So it's just from the other end. The Gemara doesn't even bother to finish the discussion. You don't see this so often, where it's like the Gemara itself says, "Bechula, yeah, you know, we dealt with that already." So, but basically, the Abaye says this din is not saying that you can never pour from the bucket. You never pour, like, once you have the animal and the rosh and the ruba in, you don't give it from the bucket. No, you can do that. It's specifically this case where there's a trough and it's like partially in, partially out, and it's a rishos yachid on its own, and you might, like, in that case, you can't pour it into the animal. Then you have to pour it in front of it. It's in that case, but it's not always. But in the case of possibly roast, in a normal case of possibly roast, if the animal's head and most of its body is in, then you can give the animal.
So you're pouring the water,
and you pour it directly into the animal.
Yeah, pouring the water from the well into this trough area. They're both mishusayachin.
Yes.
Right. They're both considered mishusayachin.
Yeah.
So you're not really. There's no really shaila. Am I right? It's caution. Why wouldn't you be?
Yeah, to? Yeah, but you might be, but you might walk outside the Rosh Hashanah because you might see a hole in it. You might come to try to fix it. That's all from Chafam and Beis. So just iron over there and listen to Shir there and or explain it after as well. Yeah, yeah.
I was wondering, why not just have the truck annexed to the well? So you should just like reach in, take the bucket. You're not removing the bucket from Rishus Yachid, and pour it into the trough, which is also enclosed.
Is it trough?
Trough, whatever.
Yeah,
the trough.
Okay, I don't know.
And then there's problem solved. You don't need Hasbiros. Except for you to drink for yourself, unless you yourself want to drink.
In that case,
and then you have a little booth. You don't need this whole thing.
Okay. This is really a Chafam and Beis discussion, right? Okay. Yeah. Okay. I'll go back to think about that afterwards. But it's like a Chafam and Beis discussion.
I mean, it's
that
dawning
case.
On me now what we're saying exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
What...
No. It makes sense that it would come into play now. Just we'll hold up for the end. Blinada. Okay. Amar of Yirmiyah Bar Abba. Amar Rav. Ein Borgenin Bavel. We don't have the heter of Borgenin in Bavel. Okay, let's take a look at Rashi over here. So maybe I'll just say it outside. Okay, so there's a halacha called Tchum Shabbos, Machlokis, if it's Deraisa or Derabanan. We've discussed this before. Rabbi Kiva holds it's Deraisa, where you're not allowed to go 2,000 amos out of your resting place on Shabbos. So if you're in like one individual house in the middle of nowhere, so then it's 2,000 amos outside your house. If you live in a city, though, it's 2,000 amos outside the edge of the city. Now, if there are houses that are within a certain distance from the city, right, with, as we'll see, about 70 amos and some shirayim, like two-thirds of an am or something like that, if it's within that space, that could be the new end point. So even if you have, like, it's one house, like about 70 amos away, that would be enough to be an extension of the city. Now, what about Borgonin? Borgonin are little huts. Rashi explains, and we're going to learn about this later in Nun Hey Amud Beis. Borgonin are little huts that, like the guardians of the city, the guards of the city, like a little guardian hut that they would guard from there. So Borgonin could, this little booth could also be an extension of the city, maybe. So we'll see. So the Gemara says, right, quoting the name of Rav, that Ein Borgonin B'Bavel. In Bavel, we don't apply the heter of Borgonin. Meaning, in Eretz Yisrael and seemingly other countries, we apply heter Borgonin, but not in Bavel. Velo Pasibiros B'Chutz La'aretz. And Pasibiros doesn't work in Chutz La'aretz. Rashi actually qualifies this, though. B'Shar Artzos Levad Mi'Bavel. Meaning, it only works in Eretz Yisrael and Bavel. When we say Chutz La'aretz, we mean Chutz La'aretz except for Chutz La'aretz, Yisrael, and Bavel. Bavel's included. We'll see why. Borgonin B'Bavel. Why do Borgonin not work in Bavel? They work in Eretz Yisrael. They work in America. They work everywhere except Bavel. Why is that? So Borgonin B'Bavel, low. Dishlichi Bidki. Because floods, flash floods, are very common there. Rashi says... Rashi is over here. I think Rashi in the previous Rashi explains it. This is at the end of Borgonin B'Bavel. So the B'Bavel ika bidki demaya v'shatvi lahu. And what happens is it washes, these floods come in B'Bavel all the time, and it washes away the Borgonin. Hilchach lo chashivi midi. Therefore, they're worth, Borgonin are worth less in these places because they're kind of flimsy huts, and the floods wash them away. So we can't consider, we don't rely on heter Borgonin in places like Eretz Yisrael or the rest of the world.
It's interesting that we don't have these flash floods. So much more. There's so many more flash floods in Babel. Nowhere else in the world is there flash floods.
It's like downhill.
Valley. It's like a valley.
It's a valley. So things are just.
Yeah, but I would think there are other places in the world where it's like Babel.
Right. And it could be that they would apply that there in the places that they lived and they were familiar with. They said Bavel is a place, and it could be similar places they would apply the same idea. Could be
known, I mean, in terms of the known world, because like, you look at like Bangladesh, Pakistan, India, that region, they have flash floods all the time, all the time within monsoon season.
The world that they were involved with, the known world to them that they were involved with.
Bavel was notorious about this.
Yeah, Pasibiros bechutzlaretz. Okay, and why not Pasibiros bechutzlaretz? So Pasibiros bechutzlaretz low delo shchichi mesifta. Because they don't have over there a masifta, right? They don't have like a yeshiva high school. Yeah, no, but they don't have like a high level yeshiva, which is this is so interesting. Lios talmidim holch, Rashi says lios talmidim holch meir leir lelmod Torah. You don't have like people, like lots of people traveling from city to city to learn Torah like they have in Bavel. Upasi biros lohutru ela lo ole regalim. But I want to limit that a little bit. It's very cool. So he says that we learned always Pasi Biros is a heter for Ole Regalim, but it says also for like people who go for a Davar Mitzvah. So Pasi Biros is a heter that extends for people doing a Davar Mitzvah. And in Bavel you have that because you have yeshivas, and in other countries you don't. So in Eretz Yisrael you have Aliyah LeRegel. In Bavel you have these high quality yeshivos, which you also had in Eretz Yisrael, and in Chutz La'aretz you don't have these as much, people traveling back all around, and therefore pasibaros are less necessary, and therefore they didn't allow the heter pasibaros. Now what's just so fascinating about this is that, I mean, just conceptually, what's Aliyah LeRegel about? I mean, it's not just a Davar Mitzvah, because like people don't do a Davar Mitzvah in other places as well. Like, what? It should just be a heter.
Well, Shushan is probably a walled city.
Yeah.
So never mind.
Right. But in general, you have a it should just be like we have a heter for a Davar Mitzvah. Like, that's what it is. And people do mitzvos all over the world, right? Whatever Jews are, they're doing mitzvos. So why shouldn't it should be, like, when are you doing Dar Mitzvah? But it seems like, perhaps it seems like Dafka, the heter was made for Olei Regalim, and perhaps anything that's Ke'ein Aliyah LeRegel, anything that we cannot, not just a mitzvah, but, like, we can, like, compare to a pilgrimage. So what's the idea of Aliyah LeRegel? Everybody goes to Yerushalayim to be inspired, to fear, right, to grow in Yira Shemayim, to see the things that they see there in the Beis HaMikdash. So what's the equivalent of that? Remember, these halachos are being taught after Churban Beis HaMikdash, right? These are Pasabi Rosh is a practical thing post Korban Beis Hamikdash, post the mitzvah of Aliyah Regel done properly. So we're saying that there's some concept of Aliyah Regel that perhaps, I think, just like what I'm suggesting, can be found in the traveling to go to yeshivas, going to high level yeshivas, going from this year to that year and traveling around. You're doing like some form of Aliyah Regel. You're going to learn about Hashem, to see Hashem, to grow in Yerushalayim.
So if you're going from Egypt, mm-hmm. to and you're being all the regal, you can't pasi bureaus do not work, even though you're all the regal.
That's what it sounds like. Wow. Right. Well, well, it's a discussion. Does Aliyah the regal? Does that? Do you have the mitzvah if you're not already in Eretz Yisrael? That's a bunch of.
This is all this kind of discussion we have. It presumes that you need freshly drawn water daily. You know, you can't just like prepare or travel on Friday and have your animals.
You're traveling.
So you get there whatever before Shabbos. It's like not Shabbos. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a kind of a underlying assumption.
Yeah, it sounds like you find yourself there. Okay, aval ipcha. But the reverse of this avdinan, we do indeed do. The reverse of this would seem to be that, I guess, Pasi Biraos, right? Pasi Biraos works in Bavel, and Borgen and work in Chutz Laretz. I think that's what it is. Okay. Ikadamra, there are those who teach us as follows. Amar Rav Yirmi Baraba Amar Rav in Borgen and Pasi Biraos, Loba Bava Bava Chutz Laretz. Borgenin and Pasi Baros don't work in Bavel, don't work in Chutzot. It's only in Eretz Yisrael. So Borgenin and Bavel, lo, shichi bidki. Right? We know Borgenin don't work in Eretz Yisrael, in Bavel, because they have flashlights. But Chutzlaretz nami lo, shichi ganve. Because in Chutzlaretz, you have a lot of thieves. Interesting. So place like Eretz Yisrael, there's not as much stealing, I guess. And Bavel, there's a lot of Talmidei Chacham, so there's less stealing. Everywhere else, there's much more stealing, and therefore, if they're stealing, people steal these huts. These huts get stolen often in places outside of Chutz La'aretz and Bavel, and therefore, the huts are also basically like flash floods. They're not worth anything because they can easily be removed. Pasi Biraos, but Bavel lo deshchichim lo. And so, why don't Pasi Biraos work in Bavel? Because Dishlichimaya, because they have bachutz. Sorry, Dishlichimaya, because they have plenty of water. Rashi explains that they didn't require this Pasi Biraos need as much. Therefore, they had plenty of water around, and it was much more accessible. They didn't have to rely on wells here and there, right? As opposed to
city-like. It's more city-like. It's not like a midbar.
It's more city-like, and it depends on rain less. Eretz Yisrael in particular depends on a lot of rain, and therefore you need to fill it up in wells and water holes and things like that. Right. Yes. Right. Yeah. You could say that as well. Yeah. B'chutzlaretz nami lo pasi baros don't work in chutzlaretz delo shichi mesivta, because you don't have the heter of aliyah l'regel or having a mesivta there. Okay. Amar le Rav Chista lemari barei de Rav Huna barei de Rav Yirmiyah bar Abba. So Rav Chista said to Mari, the son of Rav Huna, the son of Rav Yirmiyah bar Abba, who taught that halach we just learned. Amri, they say, Asisu mi barnes lebei kanishna de Daniel. They say that you guys, that you and some others, go from Barnish, which is a place, to the Beit Knesset of Daniel, the shul of Daniel, right? If I ever decide to become a puppet rav and I get to name my shul, Knesset of Daniel. Uh-huh. Or maybe if I ever go into the food business and make knishes also, maybe I'll call it the Knesset of Daniel. I don't know. Okay, so if you have anyway, they would travel from Barnish to the Beit Knesset of Daniel. Rashi says, it's very interesting, Rashi over here, take a look at it later, that Rashi says, this is the place that Daniel would daven, right? There was a rule that that Daryavish made, he was pressured into make, to that no one's allowed to daven anymore except to me. If you need anything, you come to me and daven to me and no one else. You don't daven to God. And Daniel davened publicly, and he had open windows, and he was davening, you know, three times a day as he used to. And so this makom, that many years later they made a shul there, and this is the Beit Knesset of Daniel, and they made a heavy trek to this shul on Shabbos. Dehava tlasa parse b'shabso. It was three parsi on, all right, on Shabbos, right? So tlasa parsi. So a parsa is four meal, and a meal is 2,000 amos, meaning a meal is the Tum Shabbos. They did three of Parsi, which is 12 times the Tum. It's 24,000 amos. So he said, you guys are going outside the Tum. So Amai, so he says, so why are you allowed to do this? Is it some chisu aborganin? Do you rely on Borganin? Ha'amar avu da'avuch. But your grandfather, Rav Yirmiyah bar Abba, in the name of Rav, said, Mishmei de Rav said, Ein Borgen b'Bavel. So how could you do this? Navak vachvele hanuhu misvasad. So he went out and he showed him these like ruins, dimavalan b'shivim ama v'shirayim, that were swallowed up, that were included in the 70 amos and a little bit. Meaning, he showed him that there were uninhabited houses, there were ruins that were within the 70 and a little bit distance of the city. So the ruined houses that like weren't inhabited, do count as an extension of the city.
Even though no one lives there.
That's the Chiddush, and we're going to get to that in Gemara and Hey, and Beis Mir Tzashem. But that's the big Chiddush. So you're right. There are no Borgen in there, but there are ruins there, and that's. Sorry. You're right. Borgenin are not helpful in Bavel, as per what my grandfather said in the name of Rav. But there are ruins there, and that's helpful even according to Rav Amarav. Okay. This next piece, I'm not 100% sure why we go to that. It could be because we're getting into some measurements, but the whole Mishnah is measurements. It could be because it's Rav Chisda darshaning in the name of Mari Bar Mar. And over here, this last story was Rav Chisda talking to Mari Bar Rav Huna, Breder of Yirmi Barava. So I'm not sure if it's the same Mari that we're talking about. Is the master of Huna? I'm not sure, but I'm not sure what the connection is here. But let's learn anyway. It's interesting. Got it. Amar Rav Chisda Darish Mari Bar Mar. Rav Chisda said that Mari Bar Mar Darshin Dichsiv. The pasuk says the Chol Tichla Reisi Kates, to every Tichla, very like Tachlis, every purpose, every goal. I have seen an end. Rechava Mitzvosechem Od. But your Mitzvos Hashem. This is David Melchin Tillim. Your mitzvahs Hashem are very, very wide. Davar zeh amru David. This is something David said. Velo pirshu, wasn't explained. Amru Iov. Iov said it. Velo pirshu, wasn't explained. Amru Yechezkel. Velo pirshu, and Yechezkel said it as well, and it wasn't explained. Ad shebo Zechariah ben Ido upirshu. Until Zechariah said it, and then it was properly explained. So we're going to get to this. What we're talking about now is the vastness of the Torah. Right, David says, I see an end to everything. Every goal has an end point. The Torah is infinite. I have not, or basically infinite, as far as I can see. He says it's very wide. Mitzvah is the Torah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I can't see an end to your right. Yeah. So yeah. So it says mitzvah over here in Rashi. Also, it doesn't say Torah, but as you see the as the Gemara plays out, it seems to be the Torah. Mm-hmm. So the Torah is just so vast. It's unlike any goal I've ever seen. And Eov says a similar sentiment as well as Yechezkel, and Zechariah ben Ido said it, but he gave us some more details that help us to truly grasp, but not really, as you'll see, how vast the Torah indeed is. So Amar David, as we said, Lo Pershu, Jechsiv Lechol Tichla Reisi Kates, Rechava Mitzvosechem Ma'od. Amru Iov said, Lo Pershu, it wasn't explained. Jechsiv, the pasuk says, Arucha Me Eretz Mida Verechava Mine Yam. The land is very long, Arucha Me Eretz Mida. So the land has a very long mida, long measurement, and it's wider than the sea, right? And that's the pasuk over here. This is very briefly. This is something that the New Mikubalim and discuss a lot. This pasuk is like loaded with the concept of the what's like finite in the Olam Hazeh is the Eretz, and the Yam is like beyond. Like Eretz, it's very big, but it's finite. You can see the ends of it. The Yam seems to be more like infinite. And they speak about the concept of, does anyone know, like a number that symbolizes finite and the infinite? It's like 7 and 8. Familiar with this concept? 7 and 8. What? 8 is infinite. I mean, we're getting to Hanukkah time, so we're already thinking about this Torah of Hanukkah beyond nature and 8. So they also say it regarding 49 and 50. Right? That's why we write the Torah tells us on Shavuos to count Chamishim Yom, but we only count 49. Because 50 is actually beyond. 49 is 7 times 7. It's this like finite what you can count. We can't actually count 50. 50 is like beyond. It's 50 is the 50th level of Bina, Moshe Rabbeinu.
Well, Yovel is once in 50 years.
Right. But it's 49. We count 49, and then 50th, and actually 50th is actually a restart, and it goes back to 1. Right? It's a machlokas in the Gemara, but yes. So anyway, so they point out also the Gematria over here. Take a look at Eretz, which refers to Olam Hazeh. So it says, Aruka me Eretz, Mida. It's a Mida. Mida, Mem, Dalet, Hey. 44, 49. V'rachava mina yam, but it's the all, which it references all in buzz, wider than the yam. Yam is yud mem, 50, right? So it's there's mida, but then there's the yam, which is beyond that. It's 49, there's 50. There's a lot of discussion about this. Anyway, let's move forward. If you didn't get it, great, because neither did I. Amru Yechezkel v'lo perishu. Yechezkel said, and it wasn't explained, it says, v'yifroso sa lefanai, and it was spread out before me, v'hi ksuva panim v'achor, and this is very, very interesting. Rashi says over here that it's referring, Yechezkel, there's some Torah Sheba'al Peh that was written on a scroll, and he says it's spread out before me, and it was written on the front and on the back. V'ksuv eleha, and it was written in it, kinim v'hege v'hi. Which is kinim is like kinos, lamentations. Vehege is like positive things. Vehi is some sort of negative things to happen. Kinim zupar nusan shel tzadikim. Kinim is a reference to the lamentations is a punishment to tzadikim. Balam hazeh v'chenu omer, as the pasuk says, kina hi. V'konanuha. It's a kina, and they lament over it. Okay, so that's just a pasuk supporting that the word kinim over here refers to lamentations. V'hege zu matan schar shel tzadikim. The word hege is a reference to the matan schar shel tzadikim. L'sid levo. V'chein hu omer. The pasuk says alehi gayon b'chinor. And on the kinor you're going to play happy songs. V'hi zuhi parnusan shel rishayim l'sid levo. And v'hi is a lashon of the punishments of rishayim in the future. V'chein omer, as the pasuk says, hova al hova tavo, hova tavo. More things, hova means like to happen, things being, right, hova in presence. So happenings upon happenings will happen, and this is a pasuk from Yechezkel talking about some peronos that are going to take place. I'm just going to explain that quickly because it sounds like a lot, and like what does that mean? So just briefly, there's a pasuk in Yechezkel which talks about a scroll that has something written on the front and on the back of it, and it says in it three types of things: kinim, hege, and vehi. And we just bring psukim to support that these three things refer to the punishments that befall tzadikim in olam hazeh, the reward that tzadikim get in olam haba, and the punishment that rishayim get in olam haba. And these things are kind of beyond the scope of you know, these things are included in deeper depths of the Torah, and it's panim v'achor. Okay. Ad sheba Zechariahu ben Ido pirshu, until Zechariah ben Ido came and explained, dixiv, as it says, v'yomer elai ma toroa, and he said to me, Hashem said in this nevuah, what do you see, v'omarani? And I said, we see this a lot by Nevi'im. A lot of Nevi'im, we see Yirmiyahu and Yeshayahu. Hashem says, what do you see? And he tests them and sees what the answer. V'omarani, he says, ani roa megillah afa, arka esrim. I see a megillah afa, I see a folded up megillah, as Rashi explains. Arka esrim, it's length is 20 ba'ama, v'rachava esher ba'ama, and its width is 10 amos. So I see this 20 by 10 amma scroll. Rashi explains, interestingly, that the amma that we're talking about here, amma shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right, normally an amma is between 1.5 to 2 feet, because we're measuring from the inside of our elbow to the top of our middle finger. We're talking about human measurements. We're talking over here about God's arm, kaviyachol. So we're not talking about real ammas that we can actually measure and quantify, according to Rashi. He says we're talking about like godly ammas. We'll see the relevance of it, though. So anyway, so he says, I see a megillah is 10 by 20 amos. So now the Gemara says, v'chi pashtat la, so if you unfold it, because it was a folded megillah, so how much is it going to be? Havila esrin be'esrin, right? If you have a 10 by 20 amma scroll that's folded in half, if you unfold it, now it's 20 by 20. Okay. V'ksiv hi ksuva panim v'achor. And remember, we learned from and we're talking again. This scroll represents the Torah, and remember, we saw Yechezkel's Torah scroll that was written on the front and the back. So it must be v'ki klafta la. So when you peel off the back, right? Like, I mean, if let's think about when you print double sided, right? So if you wanted to, you could have printed on two sheets. So I said we peel off the back and print it on two sheets instead of one. So you just you double that measurement. So v'ki klafta. So now it's 40 by 20. So now what we have is this divine the Torah is written on a scroll that is 20 by 40 divine amos. Okay, that's how big the Torah is. You want to know how vast the Torah is? Someone asks you, how big is the Torah? You tell them, it's 20 by 40 divine amos. Okay. V'ksiv, and then the pasuk says in Yeshayahu. Mi madad b'shalo mayim v'shamayim b'zeres tikein v'gomer. So who can measure the like the water and the heavens is a zeres, which is like the span of a hand, which tikein, that's a, like I guess it's calculated. So Rashi explains over here the whole measurement. Midas olam chatzi ama al chatzi ama. Basically, a zeres is a half an ama. A zeres is a half an ama. So we're measuring in, or is it a half an ama or a quarter of ama? Okay, so now what we're going to do, so we're going to take this measurement. So we had, it's 80 by 20. It's 80 by 20, sorry, 40 by 20. Right, is that our final measurement?
Yeah.
40
by 20, Abraham Bezrin.
Right, 40 by 20. So that gives us 800 square amos, divine amos. And the heavens and the world are only a zeres, which is going to be it's measured by only one zeres. So and which so therefore everything is much more. So nimsa kol olam kulo echad mishloshes alpayim umasayim b'torah. Therefore the entire world is 1/3200th of a Torah, meaning the Torah is 3200 times bigger than it, because if a zeres is a quarter of an amma, if Zeres is a quarter of an amma, then it's 30. Each every amma is four times a Zeres.
And 804.
What?
800 times four.
It's, yeah. So it's 800 times four.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's 800 amos. So if it's 800, yeah. So if it's 800 Zereses, it's 320. So it's 3,200 times large. The Torah is 3,200 times larger than the world itself.
And that's what we mean when we say Rachba HaMitzvahs.
Yeah.
Right. Right, it's the Torah, right. That you're saying.
Yes. So that's what we're saying over here. So the Torah is very big. Of course, we're talking about amos that we can't really measure, and there are much deep concepts. The Maharsha has a whole Mahalik in here, talking about that the four psukim refer to different layers, Pshat and Drash, and you can see the Maharsha if you have a lot of people have in the back. So what this is, and obviously it's these esoteric things are very hard to understand. One point I'll note also is just very interesting is that the original size mentioned of the Torah, the folded Torah scroll, is 10 amos wide and 20 amos tall, which is the size of a mavoi. Interesting, right? 20 amos tall and 10 amos wide. The Pesach can have more than that.
It's
a mavoi. That's
no, not that I know. What's the size?
That's the size of the folded Torah scroll that was seen by Zechariah.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know what that means.
That's why it's an Erev.
I'm not saying that. That's just something that's very, very fascinating. Yeah. Right. And just the heichal. So you could think about that on your own. Obviously, like we as I was mentioning to Penny earlier, like I got it. Like sometimes, like it's easier to go through, but really, it's so much harder to properly understand. So you can take a look at Maharsha. As always, Rashi and Maharsha are like the first two stops. Yeah, I always take mm-hmm. to try to understand this. But do Chazar, there's a lot to learn from it, and this vastness of the Torah is going to be the second secret point. The first secret point is this discussion about I think limitations to Pasei Biros and where it applies and where it doesn't. But I'll post it in the group in your session later.
You're under 40, right? That's